This is Long Island's non-commercial alternative at 90.1 FM in stereo, WUSB, Stony Brook.
Good afternoon and welcome to Chatterbox, a brand new program kicking off a brand new season here on WUSB Stony Brook. What we have going on the afternoons now are a series of talk programs. Chatterbox is one of them. We'll be going for an hour and taking your telephone calls. Our telephone number is 246-7901. That's area code 516. To run down what's going on other days of the week, on Wednesday, we have Second Bloom, which is a health-related program featuring Barbara Bloom and a distinguished guest, and she'll be asking for your phone calls as well and your questions. Thursdays, we have Jim Caligiuri with Primary, a program all about music, and we'll have all kinds of rock superstars and other assorted things stopping in the studio and saying hello and taking your phone calls. On Friday, we have Bill Carmada in an as-yet-unnamed program, as far as I know, and he'll be talking about all kinds of Long Island things. Tuesdays, you'll note we left out Tuesdays. Tuesday, we still do not have a program, a talk program. We are working on that, and I'm sure we'll have something good for you really soon. Until then, though, we have a very nice program in its place. Well, this is Labor Day, September 1983, and you probably aren't in school today, or you probably aren't even at work. That's Labor Day is defined in the dictionary as a legal holiday in honor of the working man, and I guess that's what we should all be doing today, is honoring the working man. Of course, towards the end of the week, we also have Rosh Hashanah. It's on, I believe, Thursday and Friday. And that means here at the State University of New York at Stony Brook, there is no school both today and Thursday and Friday. We only have a two-day week. So that pretty much takes care of what's going on around here this week. My guest for today is publisher Art Dietrich, who puts out a newspaper called The Bugle. The Bugle has been coming out for just over a year. In fact, the copy I'm looking at in front of me is Volume 2, Number 32. The Bugle is dedicated to saving everyone money. And Art, perhaps you can sort of outline what the primary point of this paper was when you first started, and then we can sort of look at what it is today.
Well, the Bugle was brought out more or less to fit a need. It was, having sold advertising in this area for 17 or 18 years, I started to see local newspapers and local shoppers starting to get slightly greedy and slightly complacent over the needs of the local businessman. Rates were climbing drastically. One local paper was traditionally raising their rates once every 6 months. Ads were being sold on the telephone. No forethought, no professionalism was being brought to the advertising business. And we, as everyone who starts their own business, thought that we could do it better. So we started the Bugle. And within 10 weeks, we were the largest newspaper in the Three Village area. At this present time, we're the second largest paper on Stony Brook campus, behind the campus newspaper, The Statesman.
Which you used to work for, I believe.
That's correct. We worked here on campus for 6 years. The paper grew to be the largest paper in the SUNY system during that period of time. and was self-sufficient and ran a budget for close to $150,000 per year the last year I was with them.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was the date that the Bugle first started?
The Bugle started in the third week of January, which coincidentally was the first week of school during the spring semester at Stony Brook.
Was that a coincidence?
It was a coincidence because we had left the Statesman. We had 2 weeks to put something together. Being a family person, having knowledge, as many people, of one particular subject, the newspaper advertising business, we fell into it very rapidly. We chose the name The Bugle because no one had the chutzpah to name a paper The Bugle over a period of 80 years. I mean, The Bugle was from the old horse and carriage days. And so when we went to Riverhead to register the name, the man said, oh, a newspaper? Go check the listings of all the commercial newspapers over in that file cabinet. And he says, by the way, what is the name of it? And I said, The Bugle. He says, don't even bother to check. Nobody has that sort of name on any paper. Yes. And he was right.
Since then, someone has come out with something called The Trumpeteer. What is that? That's an imitation of your paper?
Yes. The Trumpeteer was designed specifically and maliciously as a direct copy of our paper. And it was done on the basis of an attempt to copy us to mislead the public, probably.
Now, how can you tell that, just by the way it looks?
Well, the front page, the masthead was exactly the same, the difference being the Bugle and the trumpet. Box for the classified ads was a direct copy. The rates were designed as a dollar less. And It was put out by one of our competitors who didn't even identify themselves as a competitor. Putting this paper out, they put another phone number, a post office box number in the paper, but it was quite well known.
Why do you think that was?
Why was it? Because, yes, competition is healthy, and as I had pointed out before, papers were getting kind of complacent in this area, and this particular paper that put out the paper that you mentioned, The Trumpeteer, was drastically affected by the publication of The Bugle. Why? Because when we came out having knowledge and being friends with, and you do make friends over 17 years of one area, having made friends with many of the people who are business people in this area and watching their children grow up and watching their businesses grow, they immediately saw this particular imitation come on. Factually, the paper was not very well accepted. Certainly didn't grow, has remained the same size for the last whatever number of weeks they're publishing. Mm-hmm. And again, I do feel the competition is healthy. We came into a competitive field in this area and made our own way. But we didn't copy anybody, and we didn't copy anybody's rates, and we didn't copy anybody's format, and we certainly didn't cover their masthead. Coincidentally, by the way, Eric, there never is any recourse that you can take over matters of this type. But the recourse comes from the business person, the person who we're dealing with day in and day out. And that person recognized what was happening, and that particular product was not very well accepted, and to this day is not accepted in the area, as opposed to ours, as I pointed out. We've gone from one newspaper in 1982 to two newspapers in 1983 to now a St. James edition, the first paper since 1902 in the village of St. James.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting you mentioned that this new publication, The Trumpeteer, is publishing anonymously, and that they don't put any names in the paper. When your paper first came out, I don't believe there were any names in there either. Was there a reason for that?
No, my name was always there, and there was no doubt that it was Art Diedrich who was publishing.
Well, everyone knew who it was, right, especially the folks around Stony Brook right, area. But I don't think you had a staff box, did you? As big as you do now.
Well, the staff box consisted mainly of myself and my wife. That doesn't make a tremendously large staff. It has remained a family operation all this time, with the addition of one or two other people. I see you looking at the staff box now. You might see the name Diedrich repeated three or four times.
Yeah, I see, I believe, four different family members.
That's correct.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, now the Bugle is changing a little bit now. Suddenly there are editorials in the Bugle. Why is that?
Well, the bugle, we feel that a piece of media ought to have something to say. In most cases, we try to keep it light. We do not believe in a bad newspaper. And what I mean by bad news is someone was raped or the building was burnt down or what have you. But sometimes good things are happening. You might notice at the end of that column we sort of give toots on the bugle every week to various people. Nice. One of them was a person last week who we happened to be in their place of business, and a woman was being waited on who had a cast on her leg, had been hit by a car a few months earlier, laid in the road for two hours before someone discovered her. Her husband died over this period of time, a month later, of cancer, and this woman had not had a very good time of it. And this particular business person, knowing these facts, was servicing her automobile, and when the woman asked her how much does it cost, because he had put in relatively low-cost parts in there and had only given his service, he said, listen, no problem, just take the car and go and be happy with it. And this woman was so elated that someone would do her a nice favor and be nice to her for no ulterior motive, brought this woman to tears, and this made a day for this woman who was not having a very good day of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing you're mentioning in this editorial of yours, by the way, I'd like to remind the folks that they can give us a call. 246-7901 is our phone number. My guest is Art Diedrich, who publishes The Bugle, a money-saving publication. I'd like to point out this thing that was in the editorial today, where you mentioned that there's very little trust in the...
Well, what you're speaking of, Eric, is an editorial that really isn't today. It's coming out tomorrow, and I sort of was giving you input on what really is happening.
It's kind of related to the one before this, though, with the work ethic and all that.
Last week's was in regard to the work ethic. There are two things bothering us in this happening world today, and that is that the work ethic seems to be drifting away, coincidentally today being Labor Day, recognizing labor for what it is, and recognizing the working man. Labor is a different thing than it was in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s, where everybody went out, worked a decent day for a decent day's wages, but required that labor unions become involved because many people were being taken advantage of. And in strength and numbers, there's strength, and people came together into unions and what have you. But today, the work ethic of people, in my opinion, seems to be drifting away. People call me for jobs who want to know what the benefits are before they know what the labors are. They want to know what are the salaries. They don't care what the job is. They want to know how little they can work for the biggest rewards. And that's fine, because this is America, and certainly we're looking for the best for everyone. But by the same token, you have to put in labor in order to get the rewards. And I know people work 17 and 18 hour days, people I deal with day in and day out, who are out there today on Labor Day with their businesses opening, sweating over grills, packing ice cream, doing whatever they're doing to earn a living under the good old work ethic. But there are people out there today who are looking in the want ads for the best job with the least amount of efforts that they have to put in. And this is the decline of the work ethic, I feel, and it's been occurring for a long time.
Well, what's causing it? Is it the economy?
I think people are definitely afraid of what's happening. People are afraid of saying, hey, let's grab ourselves by the bootstraps and start really going at it. Let's really just put in the effort. Let's do whatever we have to do in order to earn a living, feed our families, and make life better for ourselves. And people are afraid. I only went into one of the things that were bothering me. The editorial I was reading as I was writing here for tomorrow's newspaper dealt with the mistrust people have with each other, which is the other thing that bothers me. And certainly some of it is justified. I mean, just this week we had a situation where a horrendous act came about, and that was the shooting down of the commercial airliner by the Russians. And we were spoon-fed the information by the media, little by little. First the plane was lost, then the plane had been forced down and landed, then all of a sudden the plane had been shot down, then no one knew how it was shot down. And this came to us little by little in today's paper. And who knows what is fact at this particular point. It comes out that in the area at the time was an American spy plane. We're being spoon-fed this information.
Is this the fault of the media? Do you think the media knew about this and held it back?
I think in many cases on a national level, the media is controlled by the government. But I also...
I mean the big guys, ABC, NBC...
Yeah, I think that they one favor denotes another, and somebody goes to a national broadcaster and says, listen, we'd like you to hold back 24 hours on this particular story because it'll affect the American economy or whatever it may be, and or the national image. Therefore, if you hold back on it for 24 hours, we owe you one. And the news reporter 3 months later calls in that favor and says, remember, you owe me one, so now you owe, I'm calling in that favor. Give me an exclusive story. And we are spoon-fed. A typical example, I was listening to the broadcast just before this on this Loco situation. Certainly we were spoon-fed information on Loco. And Loco did give out false information to everyone, to the media. I don't blame the media. I think the media deals with what it gets. But I also think that in many cases, the media gets a little lazy about what they're doing. I can equate that to a local story that just occurred this week. There was a story in two of the local papers that stated that St. James was to receive $275,000 in community development funds, which is the old urban development. And the headline was quite blatant in one of the papers, St. James to receive $270,000. Well, it was, that's fact, but if the reporter had gone into the story or even attended the meeting, which coincidentally I was at because I am an officer of the Chamber of Commerce in St. James as well as an interested party in what's happening in my hometown, they would have found that $150,000 of those dollars was just to implement the program. It was a, and that leaves $120,000 for community development. And $250,000 is a lot different than $120,000. They talked about rezonings in these local papers, which is not fact. If the person who was reporting that story had not done it on the phone, as I suspect, they would have found out that, and read the master plan, by the way, that they're presenting for St. James, and spoke to some reliable people who were authorized to give out statements on this particular program, on this master plan, they would have found out that the word rezoning was never mentioned in the master plan, and that was on a piece of property, which the man who owns it is sort of iffy on whether he agrees or not. But they also didn't understand or didn't care to understand that rezonings do not occur unless towns deal piece by piece on properties. So all that's been created in the by the media in the town is, I see it happening just this week. Property rents are going up because people say, hey, there's going to be funds brought in here at 6% in the town, and the value of my property is going to go up. I'm going to ask for more rent. Got petition wars occurring between two factions on either end of St. James because somebody had said something about rezoning and it was taken out of context. So the media adds to the mistrust that is occurring.
Well, is this by incompetence or deliberate manipulation?
I think it goes back to the work ethic. It goes back to if the person's going to report on a story or is overloaded on stories and can't possibly cover various aspects of the story, they shouldn't do the story at all. Because you can't do a story on the telephone, and you can't do a story on, you can't go and get quotes on the phone, because you don't know who you're talking to. I mean, if I'm talking to someone on the phone, I really don't know that that's the person, or even if they're authorized to give the information, or even if they have the proper information. And in this particular case, the person was not authorized to give the information that was given, and many words were taken out of context. And the fact, the headline saying St. James to receive $270,000 mightn't technically be true, but there were other portions of it that people should know. It is not a large-scale giveaway being given today by the community development people, nor the town of Smithtown, nor our national government. It was a very small amount, and by the way, that amount must last through 1983, and there will not be new funds coming into that development fund until 1984. But again, reporter, obviously, and I was at the hearing, and I didn't see anyone except two of the local Smithtown newspapers and Newsday there at that public hearing, didn't check the facts, probably didn't care to check the facts, just had to get this story out of the way so they could move on to the next story. And this happens in national government, and national media, and happens on TV.
Isn't it a lot harder for it to happen on a case that's in the Korean Airlines? How could it be manipulated so easily? How could you're dealing with massive media,
mm-hmm.
with major networks, newspapers around the world, not just in the United States.
These papers have more means than local newspapers to cover things of this type better than anyone around. Local papers there, and this is only my opinion, but I believe I've heard it over the years from many important people and people who know their field, that local papers cover local news more comprehensive than the national papers or the regional papers, because that probably is their function in life, to cover local things that the national papers just don't have room for. I mean, certainly the New York Times doesn't have room on page one to cover a community development fund thing or a local school board hearing or Lemon Law or whatever it may be in the New York Times. But that's the function of local papers, to bring to the public knowledge of what's happening to them around locally.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Shoreham nuclear plant before. What's going on there? What, in your opinion?
I don't really know what's going on, and I don't think anyone really knows, inclusive of Wilco. I think a tremendous political situation is occurring. Certainly it is a political situation, but I also think that if I took my newspaper and invested a capital investment of whatever billions of dollars they've invested there, and I found a mistake, I would not expect my advertisers to chip in and say, here, Art, listen, you made a mistake, but I'll tell you what, we're going to help bail you out, and even though the piece of equipment isn't working, probably never will work. I think the story, by the way, is very interesting and fragmented stories, how Wilco spoon-fed it. A number of months ago, buried back in probably about page 8 or 10 of Newsday, they stated how Wilco had tested these very same generators that had broken down under their own particular guidelines, when in fact there were guidelines set up by the federal government to test these generators, and Wilco only did it on a basis of feeding in, and I don't recall the figures, they only ran the generators at 85% speed required rather than 100% speed. And I often wonder, when I read now that all these generators are breaking down, if they had been run 3, 4, 5 months ago at the proper speed under the proper federal guidelines, whether in fact they would not now be, they would have found out about it then, not now. And now saying that it's going to cost us all these millions of dollars because the Shoreham plant is not opening. It's becoming every day so obvious that it is mismanagement. And, how can Grumman's go upstate and buy cheap power and this be denied to the restaurant owners or any large groups of people, or even to myself at my own home?
Has it been denied? Has anyone gone and asked for it yet?
Well, if I had the time, I'd probably go up and ask for myself, because my local bill I see climbing every month at my home, and I'm sure that people listening, their local bills are climbing. And if cheaper power is available to the public, why aren't we taking advantage of it? Rockville Center certainly takes advantage of their own power plant. Freeport has their own power plant. And they don't have the power outages and the brownouts and the high bills in those towns. I think there's something better. And if there's something better to be had, why can't we have it? We can't have it because Wilco is tremendously big business, and they've invested billions of dollars, and I don't say that they haven't done a good job. Certainly they brought power to a residential area that was growing so fast, faster than any part of the country, that it was probably difficult to cope with at the time. But now is the time to sit back and be rational and say, okay, we made a heck of a lot of money during those years and invested, and we're getting it back, certainly through the homeowners and the commercial properties and the industry and what have you. But not to sit back and say, well, let's give it to them again. They gave it to them with the Southwest Sewer District. How about let's give them to... I see Long Island as an area that's been raped politically and economically more than any other part of this country. It's been raped by politicians, and it's been raped by big industry and people that control our lives. And I think that's sad because... industry is starting to take a second look at Long Island, whether they even want to locate here. People are no longer relocating here. They're relocating other parts of the country. And this was the growth of our economy, and our economy was great and going along great. But now, all of a sudden, people are just probably fed up, I think, and just tired.
Now, how come it took so long? I'm talking about Shoreham now. The plant is over 99% complete. How come all of these allegations of mismanagement aren't really appearing till now, especially on the part of the Suffolk County government?
I'll tell you a strange story. Many, many years ago, I was sitting in a place of business during the day, a bar, picking up an ad, and I heard somebody talking that he had a job. And this is probably going back 10 or 12 years ago. Had a local job. And I knew the fellow had this job, and he was laying pipe and welding pipe over at the Shoreham plant. And I turned to him, I said, you know, I don't remember you being a welder. You know, what? How all of a sudden did you get this big welding job over at Shoreham? He says, this is the best tap I ever had. We just sit around here. We wait for the stuff not to be delivered or to be delivered. And my father got me the job because he knew somebody. And there's a whole bunch of us doing this, and it's a great job, and it'll probably last a long time. And it did. And it probably was a great job if you want to call sitting around not doing anything or doing something you're not trained to do a great job and collect wages for work you don't do. That's probably great. So even the people involved, you and I and the public, were busy doing it to each other at that time. It just took a long time because everybody was reaping many benefits out of this and never thought of the ramifications that would occur at this particular time.
Did you?
No, I did not. I didn't think of... it bothered me a little that somebody, even though he's a friend of mine, had a job that he wasn't qualified for, and he was sitting around doing nothing for a living but earning a very large salary, probably larger than mine at the particular time, and I was out really breaking my back working three jobs at that particular time. It bothered me a little, but I never thought of the ramifications, and this should teach us a big lesson. It should teach us a lesson that we got to think of our futures as well as right now, and we got to start working towards our future, and we got to start thinking of our own futures and how we're going to make this a better country and a better place to live. And I think the main thing we should do is follow the work ethic that probably is the highest right now in Japan. I mean, in Japan, they have work ethics that are unbelievable. But sure, everybody kids, they're the ones who bring us the cars, and they're the ones bringing us Sony radios and all this other stuff. But the fact remains that these people are working under a work ethic. And they're very secure in their jobs, but they work in their jobs and get the rewards for their jobs well done. And perhaps this is what occurred in the 1920s and 30s and 40s in this country and is not occurring now, but it is occurring in another part of the world.
Our telephone number is 246-7901, and this is WUSB in Stony Brook. I believe we have a call, so I'm going to attempt to go on to the delay system here, and let's just see how this works.
This is WUSB Stony Brook. Give us a call, 246-7901.
And here we are in delay now, and I'll just make sure everything's coming through. I haven't done this in quite a while. Yes, we are here. We have a phone call. Let me get the speaker set up. My guest is Art Dietrich, publisher of The Bugle, and I guess we could call you a community activist of sorts.
I happen to be a community conservative, but, you know, being the business I'm in, I'm seeing all these things.
Uh-huh. Well, I consider a community activist somebody who just takes an interest in what's going on around them, and
you
certainly do.
I try to keep up to date of what's really happening and getting involved where I best can.
Okay, let's take this call. USB, you're on the air.
Oh, hello. I'd like to ask a question about the Bugle.
Go ahead.
Well, it seems to me that the Bugle doesn't really seem like a newspaper. It seems more like an advertising supplement. And I was wondering whether, what's his name, Art?
Yeah.
Art thought it was a true newspaper. What is a newspaper anyway, in his terms?
All right. No, you're absolutely right. You hit the nail on the head. I am an advertising supplement. In the two papers that we publish in Brookhaven Township, we are purely that. In St. James, which we had never intended to go into, but, you know, after going in there and finding out that people want to just find out some of the local news, some of the things that are happening, we started publishing some news story, history of St. James, Toots from Art's Bugle, an editorial column, and St. James, our hopes are to bring the first newspaper for St. James to St. James in 1902. But you hit it right on the head. Yes, we are an advertising supplement. And a newspaper is a paper that covers news on a local basis, if it's a local newspaper, on a regional basis, if it's a regional, on a national basis, on a national paper. A shopper of our type is a shopper and brought in terms of advertising media. There is advertising media in local papers, which makes the paper possible to exist. Our paper exists sheerly from a businessman's point of view. It's our feeling that by taking a lot of advertisers in one certain area and giving the reader a reason to come into that area because he can shop at this store and this one next door and another one 100 feet away and another one 50 away, we are creating the reason a person would want to come to an area rather than fragmented advertising. One person's advertising in this media out in one area and another in another area, and a reader might not pick up all these papers. We're collectively running these papers and giving these ads and giving a person, just like a mall shopper. The Smith Haven Mall puts out a shopper and it shows all their stores. Well, in reality, many of the areas that we have in the Three Village area in St. James are nothing more than shopping malls without the luxury of having it covered and air-conditioned. And, again, that's the reason for our paper is definitely an advertising supplement, but we are drifting towards the newspaper format. But let me reassure you that we probably will never get into a police report into death, murder, and rape, and
well,
reports
on. Well,
I
don't want death, murder, and rape, but perhaps a cover story or something instead of a cover ad.
Well, coincidentally, you should bring that up. And as of October 1st, right now, we are advertising for feature writers to come to work for the Bugle to write feature stories in there about things that are happening in town. We have a very strong feeling. If you're going to live in this town, you're going to live in St. James or in Brookhaven or the Three Village, and bring your children up here, why not be part of it and know something of its history and what's happening in it now? I mean, this brings that hometowny thing to it. And I'm talking beyond the school board and, know something about typically U Cassidy with the Oldfield Club and know some of the things that are happening around. Know what's available at campus on the university, that there are great things happening here. Not to just badmouth it because of the fact it brings a great influx of people, but to look into it. I've been to such great plays at this place. It's like unbelievable. I never go to Manhattan anymore because I can see the things I saw in Lincoln Center right out here without going through the hassle of the triple parking.
You mean Stony Brook Performing Arts Center?
The Performing Arts Center, but I've seen them right here in the Union. I was at a performance of Godspell right here in this Union building. There were no more seats left, and I had to sit on stage, and we often kid that I was in Godspell, but it was such an experience. It was unbelievable.
Well, what makes your idea original, or do you think it is? Because hasn't the penny saver been, I don't know if that comes around here, but the penny saver is a sort of similar thing.
Oh, yes, you're absolutely right. The penny saver is, and the Yankee Trader is, and Comac is a paper called the Dollar Stretcher, which is my format and what have you. It's a format. The thing I've tried to do is, number one, is give the small businessman a break and giving them reasonable rates that I can. I'm not looking to become the William Randolph Hearst of Long Island. I am looking to, number one, make a living, obviously, to put out a good product, two, and to give the small businessman an opportunity to advertise with some reasonable rate and large circulation and under some very cost-effective ideas that I have and certainly have instilled in my business, and it's working for me.
Does that answer your question, sir?
Oh, yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. Our number is 246-7901 if you have a question for Art Dietrich, publisher of The Bugle. And I guess, will you be calling yourself editor-in-chief one day? Is that what your title is now?
No, my title is publisher right now. But, you know, one of the things you pointed out that maybe there wasn't a staff box. Now, what does publisher mean? What does editor-in-chief mean? It's a title. I mean, in our paper, we all work together towards the same end. My son delivers the paper. My son also, coincidentally, is one of the best typesetters on Long Island and typesets our paper. My wife is probably one of the best graphic artists on Long Island, and she does all the graphics and design work on the paper. I feel of myself as a good ad seller. I don't sit back in an office. I'm never in my office. My desk is a disaster area with the notes left to me that I probably don't get back to quite rapidly because I'm out here in the road. I want to know what's happening out here. It doesn't interest me, again, to be the William Randolph Hearst of Long Island.
Mm-hmm. You are, though, definitely turning more into a newspaper-ish type of a format. Do you think the time will come when you'll be primarily a newspaper as much as any other paper around today?
No, because 20 years of my background is advertising. People say to me, gee, Art, why don't you just sit back in the office and direct and promote, which is really another big part of my background. And I can't do that. I have to be out there talking to business people. What are their problems? What do they have to do to earn XYZ dollars in order to pay for XYZ ad? What's happening in their store? What's good for them, happening to them, that might help somebody else in another area using the same sort of promotion or what have you? You know, these are the things that I get involved in. I like tying businesses together. One of the main things we did last year was co-sponsor Fall Fest right here on this campus, and we got over 30 local merchants to come up here, the first time that the community and the students cooperated on something of that magnitude and made a very successful Fall Fest. This was done because I went out and talked to people, and the student government was super cooperative and wanted this, and the community wanted it. We put it all together, and everybody gained. We run a promotion trying to get people interested in their own history in St. James, and every week we give away $25 for identifying what was in a certain building during the 1950s or during the 40s or the 30s. And we get people out walking in their town to say, hey, gee, that building, I saw that in the Bugle, and did you know that that used to be a furniture store and now it's a TV store? There are so many interesting things we are finding out in St. James, and once we start into this format of feature stories in October, what we will be doing is we'll be bringing the people of Brookhaven a little of their own background. Again, we're not intrigued by bringing you news, so we'll know we'll never be a newspaper. We'll probably be what they call a feature paper, and that's probably as far as we will go with that.
Now, you say that nobody trusts anybody these days. Everyone is very distrustful when someone says something nice or offers to do a favor. Your little quote here on the front page is dedicated to saving everyone money, and there are two little things that say free. Are you trying to win people over? Are you trying to, you know,
no,
make people trust you?
After 17 years in this area and the people I deal with, when I first started this paper, and anyone starts any business, we depend on the people we've been dealing with previously to help get us on the right track and get our paper started, and certainly this was the case. But I can show you in that particular issue you're looking at, right on the front cover, a merchant who takes a full-page ad, sometimes 2 pages of advertising from us every week since the day we started, and friendship runs thin after a while, and therefore they must get response. And this man, who is a very clever advertiser, coincidentally, and knows advertising, and works very hard for his money, coincidentally, and works 18-hour shifts in his store, doesn't spend $90 all that easy because of friendship. He spends it because he gets response, and this man is obviously getting response, or he wouldn't be spending it week in and week out. And I can show you 3, 4, 5, 6 people just with full pages, no less. I probably carry, and by the way, we don't contract with people. We deal with a mutual trust. We're the only paper in the area that does not sign contracts with advertisers. We deal in a mutual trust. Hey, if the man doesn't like our paper or he's not getting a response, why tie him down to something where he has to advertise and he must be in this paper because he signed a contract? If it's not working, I don't care to live in court with him. I don't care to, because he didn't fulfill a contract. I don't care to have him angry at me. I'd rather he stayed my friend. I have many people that the paper did not work for because of various reasons. Some the paper, some the design of the ad, some because an opportunity wasn't given to let it take hold. But they still distribute our paper very faithfully every week, and they don't advertise with it. In fact, they advertise with other papers. We've built a very strong network of a delivery system through this because of our trust in people. And our feeling is if they don't want to trust us, hey, that's fine. I don't want to walk into a place or a place of business and have the man constantly angry at me, and which sets my day off on a bad note and makes the rest of my day bad and makes his day bad. So if an ad doesn't work or an advertising program doesn't work for these people, then I'd rather stay his friend, still be able to say hello, keep saying, hey, how's your son and how's your daughter, than tie him up into contracts and things of this type. It's just a feeling I have. I know contracts work for other papers. Most papers use them. I just don't. And it's just not my policy to do that.
Do you think your system could work for other papers with no contracts? Couldn't that get potentially messy if you needed something that a contract is used for?
Well, then we come to competition. Then we find out, really, if all the papers in this area were to say, from now on, guys, we don't use contracts. What we do is we work on, hey, Mike or Joe or Lee or Jeff, listen, if the paper's working for you, fine, you stay with us. You're going to spend your money because you'd be a fool not to advertise. And if you don't, fine. Maybe if you tried to, I recommend other papers, one of them coincidentally, when we had spoken to earlier, for a various reason. There are papers that work for some places that mine won't work. My paper doesn't seem to work for big fancy restaurants. And therefore, we don't make a career out of going out and seeing these people, nor do we offer them advertising, nor do they call us, because it doesn't work for them, because of perhaps our readership, perhaps whoever's reading our paper. So if we will all stop offering contracts and let everything rise to the top, I think you'd see probably 2 or 3 papers give it up in this area. Not 2 or 3, I'm sorry. 1 or 2 give it up in this area. And you'd probably see more professionalism in the advertising business going on than is existent right now.
We have about 15 minutes left. Again, I'd like to give out the phone number, which is 246-7901. You're listening to Chatterbox, a brand new program on Monday afternoons, and we will be having talk programs throughout the week during this time where you'll be invited to call up and ask various people questions and make your comments and all that kind of thing. You are listening to WUSB. I'm Eric Corley. My guest is Art Dietrich, publisher of The Bugle. And is there anything else that's really strong on your mind? I know you mentioned something in one of your editorials about the Three Village Civic Association, and they want to shut down one of the entrances to the university or something like that. What's going on there?
Well, again, I'm not purporting to be a newspaper. I mean, we've all read about the south entrance of the campus. Certainly this campus at Stony Brook brings a heck of a lot of money, if you want to be really gross about it. It pumps a lot of money into our community, which makes a lot of things exist. And on top of that, it offers a heck of a lot of other things that you have to come over here and investigate. Just walk over through the academic mall if you're looking for peace and quiet on a day like today, because it's gorgeous out there. Nobody's out there, and you're surrounded by buildings. Come to some of the plays, some of the concerts, and what have you. Come see some of the things. It's not all rock concerts, and it's not all throwing professors out of buildings like it was in the 60s. And it's not burning buildings down. There's a very serious group here. But in the South Campus entrance, that particular thing, and I don't want to dwell on it too long, there's a years ago, there was an entrance to the parking lot at South P Lot, which let cars in and out of that P Lot down there, which carries the bulk of the cars or parking of cars on this campus. The local community civic association saw to it that it was closed. Maybe they were justified, maybe they don't. I don't live on that particular road, but I've traveled it enough to know that closing the south entrance now on top of that to the campus, not giving entrance to that P Lot, nor to the southern part of this campus, is not possible. It's just not possible. It would take, the Civic Association says, close that entrance. It would stop traffic down that particular road, Stony Brook Road. But those same people they represent who live on Oxhead Road would then get a tremendous amount of traffic cutting across the Nichols Road. How about those people? Then do we close Oxhead Road as we close Oasis Drive that went between Stony Brook Road and Nichols Road? I'm sorry, Stony Brook and Halleck Road. And then we have to face such things as, I quoted in the paper, 9 traffic signs on Halleck Road. Anyone who's been on Halleck Road in the last few years and has to stop every 15 or 20 or 50 feet for a stop sign. There are 14 stop signs in less than a quarter mile on that street.
Well, how would you deal with the problem of motorists speeding by residential sections?
Well, first of all, my first guess is that this campus was here, and I suggested to the president of the of that civic association that in a questionnaire she's put in it, how many years have you been located at that particular address, to find out whether they came after the fact or before the fact. This university has been here for a number of years. My guess is that a lot of these people who are complaining about it certainly knew the campus existed and that South Drive existed long before they moved in, and now they're realizing they might have made an error because of traffic. This university derives a heck of a lot of traffic, and certainly Stony Brook Road was not built to carry the type of traffic it was in, but it's there. Let's improve upon Stony Brook Road. Now, let's not just shut it off and ignore it and forget about it. And point in fact, Hugh Cassidy, who was the ex-president of that very same civic association at this particular point, has spoken very, very strongly against closing the South and has spoken before that task force. Coincidentally, I heard for the now president, and it seems that she agrees with me that it should not be closed. It is a task force that is bringing this particular situation up from the Three Village Civic Association that is very split in their vote at best on what should be done. And again, here is the media reporting on a certain thing. I think perhaps if we took a... The president offered something very good, the president of the Three Village Civic Association. She said, you know, one of the things that would ease the pain is if the university would come along and landscape on the south entrance like they did on the north entrance and make it pretty and beautiful and nice and noise blocking as it was on the north entrance. Maybe that would cure a lot of ruffled feathers. But closing down university entrances is not the answer, and we feel very strongly, we editorialized about it, and we will always feel strongly about that. We feel that this is the best thing that has happened to the northern part of Long Island, the university being here, in many years. Before we run out of time, I don't only talk newspapers, Eric.
Right. What else would you like to bring up? I mean, you've been around this campus quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
How long since you first started working for Statesman?
Well, I've been involved one way or the other, either through business or promotions or what have you, with this campus for close to 9 or 10 years.
So you've seen a lot of changes in that time.
Mm-hmm.
What has gone on, and what do you see in the future for this place? A lot of people say Stony Brook is on the road from local prominence to national prominence, and I've been hearing that for a long time. Are we getting someplace? Is anything happening?
I think that we are going beyond national prominence. I think we are getting into an international prominence. I spoke to Dave Woods, who works for publications on his campus, and he was saying to me, and this is the ideal of any business, that the campus is getting almost recession-proof, that the money's coming in here through research, through international and national and local companies is astronomical, and this is what keeps this campus alive, and this is what makes it grow. And I remember 15 years ago, 17 years ago, where the engineering school, they hardly had engineering books in the library, no less a decent engineering program. It's one of the highest regarded engineering schools in the country right now. And this brings research money, and this is what supports a facility of this type, and this is what makes this area great. And how does this affect my readers, the people who read the Bugle or the people who read the Herald or the Village Times or the Yankee Trader? It affects them in this way, that although they might not do business or have contact with students, the research money and the situation that this campus is here creates a secondary income, whereby if a technician is hired over in the university hospital or a person to work on the cleaning force here, he is then able to give more money to his child or goes out and spends more money in that particular, in a local business area. And that local businessman then has more money to spend for advertising and offer better situations. And it's a whole domino effect that's created by this university. But the university is the core of it. And the university is definitely the center of it. And although Grumman's is a big employer on Long Island, this university is very important, coincidentally very important to Grumman Aircraft as well, who puts a lot of money in here, research.
What do you think of corporations getting involved in colleges? Do you think that's healthy?
Corporations?
Such as Grumman and IBM and even Army recruiting.
Well,
is there a place for that kind of thing here?
Most definitely, because these people are looking for bright, articulate people moving ahead. This is this university and other universities of its type are the future of our country. And why shouldn't big companies like IBM recognize the fact that this is the source of what's going to make their companies better? And therefore, why not? I don't say that they should, as occurred on this campus many years ago, where much secret work was being done, or supposedly was being done by the Navy, and various parts of this campus were closed off to the public, and all types of secret research and dangerous research, the gossip is, was occurring. This is not happening here anymore.
Which parts of the campus were affected by this?
I often wondered why you couldn't drive into the dental school without stopping at a gate. All right, and having an arm like a railroad gate there and a guard standing there, why you couldn't go there and that you had to show a pass to go have your tooth filled. But this, and we're talking about the old dental school, I believe, this was part of some of the research project that had occurred in that building previous to the dental school moving in there, I believe. I'm not really up on that. Eric, as I pointed out to you, I'm not... There are just so many things happening on this campus. It's unbelievable, and I think the campus paper does a great job on reporting on them, and I think the local papers do a great job. I only ask that they get their facts straight a little better.
You said campus paper. There are two of them.
Yes, there are two campus newspapers on this, and certainly they give a different point of view on various subjects. And that's what makes the world go around. Getting a different viewpoint. On a subject from two different papers. This occurs right here in the Three Village area. There are two newspapers in Smithtown. There are two newspapers. One's a Democratic, one's a Republican. If you read both of them, the report on the town board meeting, you'd swear up and down you were two different town board meetings. All right? And you got to get a different point of view, and that's why it's healthy to have two newspapers on this particular campus, and you read both viewpoints. And getting back to my paper and these papers, the thing that supports these things is the business advertising in it, which makes the paper possible. And if the businessman is not getting a response from that particular media, he should not be forced through contract to advertise in that media. He should be able to choose other media. I think salespeople out there hyping advertising and promotion should give a very professional approach and try to help the businessman, because rest assured, I would not exist in this area for 17 years if some sort of reputation didn't precede me, and that I really try to help business people, and that's a very strong person. I can't satisfy everybody. Yes, we've had people drop out of the paper, but by and large, we retain close to 75% of the people who started with us in the beginning.
When you worked on the student newspaper at that time, I believe the only student newspaper on campus, the Statesman, you were actually the employee of students.
That's correct.
There were students controlling your job. Now, is that a very logical way to do things? Do you feel things are run the best way when students are bosses over people such as yourself?
Let's equate that to the work ethic, Eric. In that particular case, yes, I was employed by students, and most of them are much brighter than I'll ever hope to be. But I created my own job there. When I went with that paper in the late 70s, that paper was running very much in deficit. And I created my own position there by working my tail off and doing a good job selling advertising and making the Statesman recognized for what it is now, because it was a good paper and it was just lacking the funding to become a greater paper. And I broke my back, and therefore my security was in the fact that I was doing a good job, and I was not going to be let go unless somebody on the lunatic fringe was saying we can do it better, or it's stealing from us, or whatever it may be, which was not the case. And so the work ethic for me was there, and I created my own job, so it didn't bother me. I really was employed by students, but I wasn't employed, because I was employed by myself. I was employed by making my own security. I'll tell a little story. Many, many years ago, when I first graduated from school, my grandmother said to me, "Why don't you go to work for the telephone company? You get all these benefits, and you get all these things, and you have security." Well, I've existed all these years building my own security, and I've earned a good living, and I've earned a bad living in many years. But the fact remains that I did not have to depend on someone else to tell me, "Here, this is your how you make a living, and this is how you got to do it." I made my own living. I worked under a work ethic that I knew that I had to put in the effort in order to get the rewards, and this is what occurred. And so, in a long-winded way, that's an answer to your question about Statesman. I loved working with students. I still think they're great people, and I think the people here at the campus are great people, and I've met a heck of a lot of nice people here. And I think people have a bad viewpoint of what universities or what Stony Brook University really is. And I think if they took the time to come over and examine what the facts are, just as I asked reporters to examine facts on what the Community Development Fund is doing, and what are you doing, Eric, and what is anyone doing here, they will find a world that they don't expect right here at Stony Brook, right in their backyard.
You think you'll always be a part of Stony Brook in some way?
If you're asking me, am I looking forward to retirement, I don't think I ever will retire. I think that I'll always be working and in some way always promoting. And certainly you don't move away from your base of operations after doing it for 20 years and say, "Well, let's do it someplace else," because we're getting old. And, you know, your values change. But my values as far as work ethics and what have you don't change. I'd like to talk to just something else to throw everybody off kilter about something.
You have 1 minute.
Okay. I belong to two organizations, one of them being a Chamber of Commerce, of which there are two of us actually putting in effort, and we're having big deals, a lot of struggle in that organization. I belong to another organization which is attempting to rebuild in diorama a model railroad of the Smithtown to Port Jefferson Railroad. And we have 20 men involved, some of them engineers from this campus, from the phone company, from Grumman's, from the telephone company, involved in building this model Line L railroad, which will be the largest display of its type in Nassau or Suffolk County. And we have 20 people working at this, but we're all putting in the effort. And that organization is so far ahead of schedule, it's unbelievable. And the difference being that we all just get in there and work, as opposed to the other organization. Two of us work, and we're floundering, and we're having difficulty. It's so easy when people divide the workload and put in effort, as opposed to working and not putting in the effort. And someone once told me, I think it was a professor at Suffolk Community College, that it's much harder to not put in the effort than to put in the effort. And it's just so much more difficult. And this is probably a philosophy that I hold. I am a workaholic, so. But the train thing is something exciting in my life, which gets me away from the newspaper business, and is something that everyone in St. James and in Suffolk County is going to gain by, because the day of dragging our, the tradition of dragging our children to 34th Street to see, at Christmas time, to see a Line L train layout in every major department store, those exhibitions no longer exist, and now we're going to create one right here in Suffolk County and have people...